We're starting our series on the Jewish home. We've been doing this series for almost a decade. This series began when I got a phone call from a young lady who was dating one of our guys. And she says, you know, the guy is a great guy and everything's great, but when we talk about how to run a home, he's clueless. I said, what do you mean? You know, we learn about Judaism all day. He said, yeah, you learn, she said, you know, you learn about a lot of halachot and laws. But when we speak about a relationship, about being a parent, he could talk to me about spending Pesach in Egypt. To go on vacation to Egypt for Pesach. Yeah. She says, you know, you got to talk about what it means to live a Jewish life and how you build a relationship. So the history of this class goes that I called Rav Listman with her comments. And I said, you know, we got to address more about how you build a relationship, how you run a home. And Rav Listman said, great idea. And I said, I'm the youngest. Back then I was the youngest. I'm close to the youngest now. But then I was the youngest staff member. I don't think I'm the one who should give this class. There are a lot of people with white beards here. He said, fine. 2 weeks later, the class isn't happening. I call him up. I say, you know, you agreed it's a good idea. He said, right. Okay. Fine. 2 weeks later, I call him up. And it's still not happening. And he says, if you didn't get the hint yet, if you do it, it'll happen. And if you don't do it, it won't happen. So you decide. So that's how this class began. Baruch Hashem, in the course of the last decade, I've gotten a lot of feedback, and that gives me the strength to continue this series. We start fresh every year, and you're welcome to listen to the previous classes. I decided this year to do it differently than other years. I hope it'll be better. Your feedback is welcome. Our goal in this class is to cover many tools that will help you, hopefully, in building a wonderful relationship with your spouse. There isn't one model that you have to aspire to. It's not like the home has to look like this. There are many different homes that are good. Different couples work out different systems. For some couples, it's great that the husband runs the finances, for example. For other couples, it's great that the woman runs the finances. For some couples, it's great that they're both involved in the finances. When it comes to making decisions, there are husbands who say, I need a wife who's going to run the show for me. There are wives who say, I need a husband who runs the show for me. And then there are people who say, I want a partner. I want to think things through together. Can you say one is right and one is wrong? If it works for them, that's great. I remember a very good friend of mine told me, you got to find me a wife. We were both single, but he thought I was supposed to find his wife. He said, you got to find me a wife who knows halacha. Because you know me, I always slept in halacha class, so my wife better know halacha because I don't. It's like a childhood friend. Okay, it always shocked me that that's what he wanted, but that's what he wanted. So, fine. You know, you can't, when it comes to many facets of the relationship, no one can define for you what's right. But then there are things which have to happen in every home. And there are things which are naturally present themselves as hardships within every home. And that's where our class comes in. Meaning I'm going to try to stay away from things which I think are up to you. There are going to be topics which I won't touch because I really think there are many legitimate options. But there are areas where many people run into hardship. I want to throw a shocking line at you. If the statistic today is that over 50% of the couples end in divorce, so that means most of your friends who will get married will get divorced. Think about the statistic, right? The statistic today is that it's well over 50% of marriages end in divorce. That means most of your friends who will actually get married will also get divorced. So that's a very good reason to have a class to discuss about, you know, how do we avoid that. And again, do we have anyone here that's married right now? Everyone's single. Okay, we sometimes have people in class where right. I missed you. Right. Okay. So very often the people who are married, they'll vouch for, we had a student here once who was divorced 3 times, more than once. And very often, people will tell you, if you just follow A or B or C, you can avoid that. It doesn't have to happen. I'm not going to ask Maybe I should ask. I'm not going to ask. But many years I ask, is there anyone here whose parents are not divorced? Sometimes I get one hand, sometimes two hands, sometimes three hands. But that's the generation we live in. So that's another good reason why we really have to study this, because we don't want to end up there. We want to build a relationship. The home can be a source of stability. The home can be a source of happiness. The home can be a source of tranquility. Now, I want you to think of adjectives that describe what you want in your home. Let's go around the room. Tell me what adjectives describe. When you think of a home, which words would you use to describe the home you want to see? Nahum, you want to start? Peace. I just gave three. He said, Ariel says peace.
Ability to grow.
One word adjectives. Akiva.
What did you say?
Terms
nurture.
That will.
That's the word.
Simcha.
Simcha.
Warmth.
Warmth.
Welcoming.
Welcoming.
Love.
Love.
Contentness.
Huh?
Contentness.
Contentness.
Tolerance.
Tolerance. All of this is possible. Yet, most of the people you know don't have this in their homes. And the married people who are watching this class are about to switch the channel and say, right. That's what I was dreaming of, right. But the truth is that it can be. Only I want to tell you more than that. It can be the greatest source of happiness. It can be the greatest source of tranquility. It can be the greatest source of satisfaction and strength. But if it can be so great, don't think it can happen easily. If you see couples where you think they have a great marriage, I want to tell you a secret. No one has a great marriage unless they're working on it really hard. They've worked on it in the past, and they're working on it in the present. It doesn't exist. The great myth, and it's a very problematic myth, the great myth that keeps misguiding people is this idea that if we match, it'll work. No, it won't. The nature of man and woman is that they explode. There isn't going to naturally evolve a peaceful, tranquil, beautiful home. What naturally happens in a home is everything but that. The nature of man and woman collide. They can supplement, complement one another. But that takes a lot of work. If you're willing to invest the work, and obviously you are because you're here, then you can attain that. It can be the source of happiness. But you know what? In a generation where everything we buy has to be instant, did any of you ever cook coffee in a pot? Did any of you... one guy. Did you ever cook tea in a pot? French press, right? Everything has to be instant. So then when suddenly you have something that doesn't work instantaneously, the first reaction is, this doesn't work. Guess what, guys? Marriage is not instant. It doesn't work instantly. What happens instantly is infatuation, excitement, lust. And then you've got to build the real thing, and suddenly it doesn't happen on autopilot, and it can be super annoying. And I'll tell you a secret. Most people think, I get along really well with my friends. I'm a very popular guy. And whenever I had to go out with girls, it went beautifully. And girls like me too. So if this marriage thing isn't working, there's something wrong and it's not with me. That's the nature of the beast. Yes. That's what happens. Now, you understand that that makes it all worse, because then you expect her to change. But she's just being a natural woman. She's not doing anything wrong. A natural man with natural woman in one home does... It explodes. It doesn't work. You can make it work. If you're willing to work at making it work, it can be the most beautiful thing in the world. You see, when Hashem wanted to describe the Torah, when Hashem wanted to describe his relationship with the Jewish people, he chose the greatest relationship on the planet. Which relationship? Between man and woman. But it doesn't happen on autopilot. Would any of you like to fly an F-16? Would any of you board an F-16 without taking a few classes on like how you take off, how you land? So there's a guy, I don't remember his name, he was giving this class and he gave this allegory and he said, you know, you wouldn't fly an F-16 without taking a course. You wouldn't try taking off and landing, yet you want to get married without studying it a little bit. And there's a person sitting in the front row who bursts out laughing. So he says, can you tell me why you're laughing? So he says, yes, because I fly F-16s. And I have to tell you that marriage is so much more complicated. Okay, so that's why we're here. We're going to discuss classical things. Most of them are not specific to Judaism, but they are lessons that the rabbis taught us. They are lessons that we learn about how Judaism wants us to behave that will help us, that will help us to build a beautiful relationship. You don't have to buy anything I say. I'm not telling it to you as Torah from Sinai. When we're learning together the book of Joshua, so then what I'm telling you stems from tradition. There you do have to buy what I say. If you want to be a traditional Jew, I'm telling you what I'm saying. You could question what I say. I'll tell you the sources. But that's Torah. Here, this is a gray area. You don't have to buy it, but I will try to explain everything I say so that you can understand it. And then you'll decide whether it makes sense to you or not. I recommend you take notes because everything we discuss, almost everything, will sound obvious. Yeah, until you get married. And suddenly you'll say, gee, what did he say? What am I supposed to do when this happens? You're about to leave the house and your wife says, just one more thing. And you're going to miss your bus for that one more thing. Now what are you supposed to do? You can't end the conversation because every time, just one more thing. What am I supposed to do? We'll get there. If there are specific things you want us to discuss in the class, tell me. You can tell me anonymously. You could email me, you could leave me a note. So that's fine. There's one point I have to reiterate again and again and again, and please remember this. This class is about marriage. Marriage is what happens after you've dated, decided to marry the person, walked under that canopy, into the cheder yichud, into your house. From that minute onward, our class begins. Our class is very often confused with a dating class. We are not talking about dating here. After Pesach, we have a dating series. Our class begins the morning after the wedding. None of what we say here should be applied to dating. Dating is it's a totally different scene. It has nothing to do with what we're discussing here. The way to build a relationship with a woman within marriage is totally different than how you build a relationship within dating or how you're supposed to date. So please don't confuse it. Second point, specifically for our viewers, this class is for men. There isn't a single female sitting in this classroom. Mm-hmm. If I were talking to women, I would say things differently. You have to remember, I'm going to make a lot of demands on you guys. So women really like this class. They always tell their husbands, listen to him, right? For sure, because I'm talking to men. If I'd be talking to women, I'd be making demands of them too. You want to make a marriage work, then at least 50% of what we say here should be said in the female sense. If women want to listen to this, I'm just saying, then you got to apply it to you, not tell your husband, hey, you got to listen to that class. That's not what this is all about. And again, my disclaimer is that you guys have to think about what I'm saying here. You don't have to accept it. And if something I'm saying is wrong or doesn't apply correctly in your scenario, that's your responsibility. Meaning, I'm not telling you that this is always correct or ever correct. To the best of my understanding, it is. And as such, I'm presenting it. But the responsibility is on you within your lives to see if and how to apply it. There is a difficulty when a person does tshuva. There is a challenge. The challenge is to remain a balanced individual, to know where I am supposed to be flexible and where am I supposed to be rigid. Most of what I'm saying are areas where you can be flexible. Don't take these classes and have one more point in your life where you think you have to be rigid. In general, in the tshuva process, you have to learn about flexibility and that things are not black and white, and learn where and how to compromise. In these classes as well, there's a lot of room for within each household to apply things with flexibility. And the final point, which I've said before and I'm going to keep saying, I strongly recommend you find houses, homes where you can go for meals, where you can feel comfortable and learn from those homes. Most people grew up in homes where there were issues, and even if you grew up in a beautiful, wonderful home, there is what to learn from other people. I remember I went to one family where the kids were all over. I was dating my wife, and I spent the holidays by them, so they lived close to where my wife's parents lived, and this way we could date over the Sukkot vacation. And every meal, the kids would get me stained. So I had two plans of option, two plans. Either I brought a sweater, so every time I left their house, I'd have to put on a sweater because I was stained from all the kids climbing all over me, or I brought a change of shirt. So I wasn't smart enough then. If I were really smart, I'd always wear the stained shirt for the meal and then the regular shirt. I didn't do that. Every time I changed another shirt, okay. Sometimes you don't think of things. But that's not what I remember. Meaning, I'm telling you an interesting part. The real thing I remember, and I could have easily missed it. I remember that whenever they'd bring food to the table, the husband would take the plate, go to his wife's plate, and take the best portion for her. Because usually what happens, the wife is helping serve the food, and by the time she gets to the table, she gets leftovers, right? So as the kids were climbing all over me, I made a mental note. Hey, that's beautiful. I've never seen that before. I've been to different people's houses. I've never seen a husband who takes the best portion for his wife. You go to someone's house, you could pay attention to the kids climbing all over you, getting you dirty. You could tell yourself, how am I going to show up to the next date? They just got ketchup on my shirt. Or you could tell yourself, let me pay attention to what's really important in this house. Let me think about what I'm seeing here. You don't have to learn from everyone, but if you pay attention, you might learn. There's a big rabbi who lives down the block from here. Super genius. He was considered the top student of Rav Soloveitchik's. All of Rav Soloveitchik's students go to him to look at his notes. I had the good fortune of eating a Shabbos meal at his house. I noticed that his Shabbos table, he asked his wife what she learned that week. She would go to Shiurim, and she would tell the Divrei Torah at the Shabbos table. The man is so rich in Torah. But he gave his wife expression. I saw how the kids absorbed the ethics that she was teaching so differently than if the father would be teaching them. I made a mental note. Wait a second. There's what to learn from that. There's another big Talmud Chacham who lives only a few minutes walk from here. I had the good fortune of spending a Shabbos by him. Beautiful children. We end the Shabbos meal and they sit down and take out Chumashim and everyone reads a Pasuk going around the table. And it's fun. He doesn't give out rewards. But they just read. And they go around the table and everyone reads a Pasuk. I made a mental note of that. Only this year. You know, we've been married 12, 13 years. It's only this year that I was able to implement it in my house. Only now do I have enough kids who are of age to read, to enjoy it. It's a very interesting experience. You don't have to reward the kids. You don't have to make it into fun or riddles. Just no pressure and no commenting. No one can make corrections on if someone else reads incorrectly. So everyone's comfortable and reads, and guests come and they get accustomed to it and they join in. It's a very nice thing. We don't finish the parasha every week. Sometimes we do one aliyah, sometimes four, sometimes the whole parasha. It's a very nice way to end the meal. Never saw that before. He told me his grandfather started the custom in the family. So when you go to people's houses for Shabbos, pay attention. Pay attention to what's important, and you could learn things. And you could learn things that we won't be able to teach here in the Machon. And even if you come from the best house, there's still things to learn as you go to other people's houses. This class is going to try to address many things. But I don't always know what to address. A year or two ago, a guy from the Machon, who went through the full series, comes to me before his wedding and says, how important is it for us to buy a couch? So I said, why is it so important to buy a couch? I mean, it's nice, but why is it important to buy a couch? So the guy says, well, you know, like in all the movies, when the husband and wife have a spat, so he gets to go out, he goes out to the couch. So I said, no, that's not how it goes in Judaism. You're not going out to the couch. You're making up. You're going back into that bedroom. You do not go out to the couch. Don't get a couch. If that's your plan, don't get a couch. Okay, so I never thought to address that in any of the classes. It didn't dawn on me until this guy came and said, how important is it to get a couch? Okay, now I learned that that's what he was thinking. You're welcome to ask questions after the class as well. But I'm saying that's where being a part of a home will help you. A point aside, if you're a part of a home, that means you help. Being a part of a home doesn't mean I take, it means I give. That means if they need help cleaning for Pesach, you show up and you help. If at the end of the meal you clear the table, you clear the table too. If there's garbage to be taken out, you take it out. If there's sweeping to be done, you sweep. You want to be a part of someone's home, that means you help. You bring something for Shabbos. Make sure it's a hechsher they eat. You don't want to. You can't afford to bring something, do something else that's helpful. Or for them to take the kids out. People sometimes want to become a part of a home, and they do it, they think they do it, by taking, showing up, sleeping when it's convenient for them, doing whatever work. That's not called being a part of the family. Being a part of the family means I'm willing to contribute. So I strongly recommend you guys find homes, and Be'ezrat Hashem, if you need help, then our department should work to help you, Be'ezrat Hashem, to find homes, and pay attention, try to learn from it, and you could learn from every home. Whenever you're a guest, sometimes you'll learn what not to do, right? You'll tell yourself, I'm never doing that. Okay, good. That's also an important note. Okay, so now that was all introductory. Now let's begin. What is marriage? What is marriage? Does anyone here have their cell phone on with internet? You want to check how the dictionary defines marriage? Anyone? Can you do that for a second? How do they define marriage? Let's hear the official definition.
Marriage is a socially or ritually recognized union or legal contract between spouses.
Socially or ritually or legal contract.
That establishes rights and obligations between them, between them and their children, and between them and their in-laws.
Okay, you guys heard him? You want to know how Judaism views marriage? I want to sum it up with a beautiful wedding invitation I saw this year. On the top of the wedding invitation, it said, Mode ani lefanecha shehechezalta bi nishmati. I give thanks to you, Hashem, you gave me back my soul. Okay, so we say that half your soul was taken somewhere else, right? Man was cut in half, and half of him, the other side of him, the female side of him, was placed somewhere else to grow. And now the soul has to get unite, and we say we are again discovering ourselves. The Talmud says a man who is not married is not a man. We will, Be'ezrat Hashem, learn that piece of Talmud, how the Talmud views a person who's not married. So when we speak about marriage, you know, one of the blessings we make under the chuppah, we say, blessing Yotzer Ha'adam. God created man, because in our mind, this is the beginning of creation. The marriage. That's where life begins. There's a beautiful thought in the Medrash Rabbah, in the end of Bereishis, the Medrash discusses the correspondences in the world. We have 7 days. You guys know where we have 7 days? Name two places in Judaism where we have 7 days.
Creation.
In creation, where else?
The menorah.
7 days?
Branches.
Seven branches.
Pesach.
Okay.
Sheva
brachot. 7 days of celebration after marriage. Where 7 days of mourning. So the Medrash says, correspondence. The first day of marriage is the happiest day. The first day after someone dies is the saddest day. A person doesn't die until them. The first 3 days after a person gets married are the happiest 3 days after the first day, right? Including the first day, I'm saying that. And so too, the first 3 days of mourning have a separate halachic status. They're the saddest. And then you have the seven. And then you have 30 days of mourning, 30 days of celebration. A year of mourning, a year of celebration. Correspondences. Etzelu matzeh alokim. God created a world where you have two sides to the coin, right? So I mentioned this Medrash in Shul, and a person made a very smart comment. He said, isn't it interesting? We would say that corresponding to death, you should have a celebration at birth. Birthday, 3 days, 7 days. We don't do that. No one celebrates 7 days after the birth, right? Marriage. Because he pointed out to me that really the opposite of death is life and marriage. Not when the child's born, when the person gets married. We don't make a blessing. When the child's born, that's when you think to make a blessing. Yotzer Adam, blessed are you, God, who created man, right? That blessing, where does it belong? Where a baby's born? No, when a man gets married. Yotzer Adam, when a couple gets married, that's when man is formed. So when we look at marriage, we look at it as the beginning of life. That's where life, that's how man is supposed to live life. That's how we're building our lives together. We're learning the work of the Chafetz Chaim, right? We spoke last week about Rav Yisrael Meir of the city of Radin. He was known even among the non-Jews as a tremendously pious person. And you guys can look it up. The New York Times wrote an obituary about him in 1933 when he passed away. It discusses how Jews and non-Jews alike would emigrate to him to get his blessing. When he passed away, Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman eulogized him, and he said the following thought. He said, in the secular world, a man is judged based on his accomplishments outside the home, and no one really cares what he does inside the home. How many of you know that Abraham Lincoln couldn't get along with his wife? He would go all around giving speeches because he couldn't bear being at home with her. How many of you know that George Washington's next door neighbor fled back to England because George Washington was such an adulterer, the guy couldn't figure out if the children were his own or George Washington's. So the guy fled back to England. No one bothers telling you that, right? Because who cares? Because what's important are their accomplishments outside the home. And in Judaism, it doesn't work that way. In Judaism, we say the first question is, what kind of home do you build? How are you inside your home? And that's question number one. And we don't even look at question number two before we've answered question number one. And so when we value a person, the first question we ask is, what type of person are you? And we'll end with a very scary thought. I don't know where it's written, but it's quoted from the Zohar, that in the world to come, when a man will come to judgment day, the one who will be sitting as judge over him is his own wife. That's what they quote from the Zohar. I don't know. I don't learn Zohar, but that's what they quote. So in conclusion, what we learned today, there is nothing better than a good wife. There's nothing better than a good marriage. God gave us the greatest gift in the capacity to build this partnership, to actually realize our humanity, to come to a realization of our potential within this beautiful framework called marriage. If it is the greatest thing, then it is also the hardest thing. And so we will, Be'ezrat Hashem, study a point to ponder. Everything we're studying now seems theoretical, right? Starting next week, we're going to discuss practical. We're going to start discussing what really happens within a marriage and how we deal with it. And I think every person should think about how he can apply it in his own life, meaning with parents, with a roommate, with a chavrusa. Hey, if we start applying it now, we can at least start trying to get into the correct habits. One of the goals of this class is also to help develop a frame of mind, not only habits. But it's also helpful if we learn about being patient, if we learn about being forgiving, if we learn about writing a note showing appreciation. So try to apply it in your own lives now. Try to get into the habits of learning these traits, which will, Be'ezrat Hashem, serve you in good stead as you build your married lives as well.